Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
So we are going live, and now we are live. Hello to the wonderful Julia Richardson.
Hello. Thanks so much, Mel, for having me.
Oh, I'm delighted to have you. You're such a talent. You're such a generous person. And you're a wonderful writer. And I understand that this is your first interview.
It is, yeah.
So I'm planning to be very nice to you. If I'm not nice, you say to me, Mel. Remember,
I would not have agreed to this interview if you weren't nice.
And actually, I had to chase you down. And now I'm going to tell you why I was so interested in interviewing you.
I'm curious.
Well, you have two books out. One book that just came out right this now, Let's Build a Little Train. But I want to talk to you today mostly about your little dandelion. Because I've been trying to write a good dandelion book for years.
Really? Okay.
Yes, and you've written a beautiful one. And I said, I have to track down this lady. So it started out of some kind of intense, benevolent energy, jealousy, actually. Intense, benevolent jealousy. But now that I just met you, I'm really intrigued, delighted to meet you, and very happy for you that you have this gift of such wonderful writing. I'll just mention that my name is Mel Rosenberg, in case I've forgotten. I'm the host of the Children's Literature Channel of the New Books Network, where you now are glued. And my wonderful guest today is Julia Richardson. Her first interview. Hello, Julia.
Hello.
So do you want to show, I see that you have your books, which is always a good idea. Let's have a look. Let's start with the one that just came out. Let's Build a Little Train. Sleeping Bear Press, right?
Pardon? You froze up?
Okay, we're together again. So I said it's a Sleeping Bear Press,
this one,
right?
Just came out. They're both Sleeping Bear Press, same editor, Sarah Rocket. Okay. And this one just came out in September. So it's been fun. My 2.5-year-old grandson insists on sleeping with it. So doesn't matter what happens with it from this point on, I feel like it's a success.
So you can say that it's been quite a ride.
Right. Yeah. So it just follows an engineer as she, I don't know how to get it up there.
It's up there. You can see it. Don't show too much of the book. We want people to buy it.
Yeah. So there's the team.
Okay. So it follows an engineer.
Yeah. And she works with the team to build a steam engine train. And it's written in rhyme and it's real short. So it's an easy read for tired parents. And it's been fun. I actually just received an email from some people I didn't know, some grandparents, and it had a picture of them with their grandson who has autism. And he has a hard time getting close to people or sitting still and allowing people to get close to him. But he sat right down and looked at the book and let them read it to him and looked at all the pictures. So that was fun too.
There's something magical about picture books, isn't there?
Yeah, right?
For sure. And now the one that brought you to my show.
Yeah.
The Little Dandelions.
Yep. This one came out in March of 2021. So I have to open it up because I love the cover. I just think it's perfect. Whoop. There we go. I think it's
incredible.
So pretty.
Little Dandelions seeds the world.
Yeah. So I was lucky to get these illustrators.
Yes.
They're a husband and wife team and they work together. They made incredible illustrations. And it's been so much fun. Yeah.
And I love your lyrical text here with the roots and the shoots.
Thank you.
Can you read a little bit of it? Can you tell that I'm happily jealous of you?
I'll tell you about how this came about after I read a little bit.
Okay.
Swish, swirl, 100 seeds fly. One little seed flies with the wind, far, far away, darting, drifting, dropping, down with a shoot, root, up with a shoot. A little dandelion blooms in Africa.
I love this. Down with the root, up with the shoot.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
The flower fades, fluff puffs, poof, swish, swirl, 100 seeds fly. And then it just goes through all the continents. And there it is.
Which is good because, you need to have 32 pages. So 7 continents, it's about right.
That was the hardest thing about writing the story, actually, was getting all of the continents in and on 32 pages.
Lucky there are only 7.
Right. Yeah.
I
started out writing a character-driven story and had way too many words. So, yeah, I finally, I was at the library, actually, and I saw the book Stick and Stone by Beth Ferry, and it just has few words. Yeah, and I was reading through it, and I thought, I wonder if I could do that with my dandelion story, just pull all the words out and just have very few lyrical words, and it worked.
Well, Beth Ferry has been on the show. Hi, Beth. That's wonderful. Before we go now to your writing process and the career, I want to take you back to being born. I always do that. So share your early life with us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm the oldest of 6. And I grew up reading.
Are you an ultra-Orthodox Jew or something?
No, I'm Catholic. I grew up Catholic.
Okay.
They
also have lots of children sometimes. So you're the eldest of 6 children.
I am. And I was fortunate. My parents had a subscription to a monthly book club. So books used to come to the house. And so I would read them to the younger ones. So that was fun. I've always loved reading picture books. It's one of my things to do, to sit down next to a young child and just, disappear into that magical world. I wasn't really a very good reader when I was young, and I was a terrible writer. Actually, I can show you because I'm doing a school visit. This is how I used to write my name, and I don't have it upside down or backwards, but that's seriously how I used to write. And
It looks like Hebrew.
right. So fortunately for me, my teacher realized when she took my paper and mirror and upside down, So I was actually writing every letter upside down and backwards, which was because of dyslexia. And fortunately for me, I lived in a school district where they got me some help, and I didn't like it, of course, because I had to sit and practice my writing, tracing my letters while the other kids were playing. We used to play back in those days in kindergarten and first grade. So, but by the time I was in fourth grade, I really enjoyed reading. But I remember I was the oldest of six, and my two younger sisters passed me in my reading group, like passed my reading group. So I always kind of felt like I wasn't as smart because they were reading far beyond me very quickly. So it took me a while to finally love reading. And I never thought I was a good writer. I never liked writing. I actually cringed in high school and college when I had to write. But I do remember in college, my English professor, who was published author for adults, reading my paper out loud and saying, "This is an author." And I was just, you know, slouched down in my seat, like totally embarrassed. But yeah, I wrote a paper on the grapes of wrath.
Wow. One second. Wonderful. Hey, who was your professor?
I don't remember her name now. That was a long time ago.
Well, we'll have to remember it because I like to.
I should remember.
To reach out and thank these people who change our lives.
Right.
So homework. Who is that professor? And when you were like a five, you know, I have this theory, Julia.
Right. Yeah. I've heard your theory.
Okay. What's my theory?
That all children's writers are sort of stuck in a time period, and that's why we write for children.
Are you stuck?
And I will say, my childhood was my favorite part of my life. I had a fabulous childhood with five younger siblings, and we lived out in the country and we ran wild outside. Lots of time spent like in the woods, exploring the creek, swimming in the pond with animals. Actually, when I was in first grade, the school came to my house to visit because it was like a zoo. My dad had so many animals. So yeah, it was fun. I had a great childhood.
When you say the school came to visit, like the whole school?
Did you? My grade.
Your grade. Because you lived out in the country. So I thought maybe like the whole school was 14 kids.
No, there were a few more. I had 100 in my graduating class.
Ah, wow. So that's a big visit to the to your farm.
Yeah.
And so if I were to ask you now, do you remember your favorite picture books growing up as a five-year-old or reciting them to your five-year-old siblings?
My favorite picture book, I have it here. I knew you were going to ask me. See, I do my research.
Why don't you just ask yourself?
When it's your first interview, you do your research. So yeah, here it is, Old Black Witch. And I love this story, mostly because it has a blueberry pancake recipe in the back. And my mom used to make the pancakes, and it has all these little funny songs. Boil cauldron, make a brew. What kind of berries make pancakes blue? And so, yeah, my brothers and sisters and I all love this book, but look at all the words in it. There's like probably, it would never be published today. Look at that. Now who's going to read that?
Words and imperfect meter. Oy vey. Who would publish them?
Nope, this would not get published today, but I absolutely love, we all love this book. So, yeah.
So, back matter wins.
Yeah.
In college, a professor cited your paper on Steinbeck, right? And
yeah, read it to the class.
Incredible. And then what happened?
And then nothing happened. I thought it was a fluke. Nothing. I did write a picture book and submit it. I think I was in my early 30s, but it, of course, was rejected. And then I thought, well, that's just a dream. That would never happen. So, yeah, I went into, I'm a nurse. I was a nurse, and I followed in my parents' footsteps. They're both in the medical field. And so I thought that those were my options. I do remember an uncle saying to me, I thought you were going to go into something creative. And I remember my heart just jumped like, oh, that would be wonderful. But I thought, oh, I could never do that. So, but the reason these little marionettes are all here is because when I was 13, my brothers and sisters and I all received marionettes for Christmas. And then I immediately started writing plays. Of course, they were terrible. But we built a stage out of some couch cushions, actually very wobbly stage out of the couch cushions. And then we invited all our relatives over to watch this play, which they were very tolerant relatives, I should add. So anyway, I continued doing the marionette theater all through. So I would work as a nurse and come home, and I would be up till 2 o'clock in the morning in my basement writing plays. And then I eventually started making marionettes. So I made all of these marionettes, and I continued putting on plays, never realizing that what I was actually doing was creating stories for children. I never thought I was good at it until I received a letter from a mother after I did a show at the library, and I didn't know this lady, but she wrote me a letter, a thank you letter, and said that her 4-year-old son actually passed away from cancer. A few hours after my show. And then she thanked me for putting laughter into his last hours, and she encouraged me to pursue publication. So that was the start. Like, oh, I thought, okay, like I've got to do something with this.
Wow.
At the same time, Oprah was saying, do what you love, the rest will come. And of course, I loved creating stories for children, but of course, I was also sort of stuck in my mixed up dyslexic world, thinking I could never do that. But I decided to try, and took 5 years of, well, actually it took 4 years. And then one of my stories won first place in a contest. And I thought, oh, okay, I'm gonna be published now, but nobody wanted it. I couldn't get that story published. It's actually one of my favorite stories. But it's still stuck in my computer.
Okay, one second. We're going to pitch it in a moment in case we have any agents.
No,
among
it
our
will
thousands.
Never, it will never work. I know that now, but I didn't. It's not own voice. So it's not my own voice. And that was a tough lesson for me to learn. I was telling somebody else's story. So I don't think it will ever be published. But it's a great story.
Well, let's work on that. I love challenges. So if you wish, we're going to take it off camera and we'll work on your story. So you were working as a puppeteer and playwright because you needed the extra money. You were nursing a day.
I never made money. I never made money with my marionettes. I just did it because I loved it. That's why I write children's books too. If I was looking for money, I wouldn't be a children's book.
Okay, so
I'm looking for money, but I don't get money.
Okay, but you have a family?
I do. Yeah.
And we they don't have to. Wonderful. And they don't have to be supported?
I have a wonderful husband, and when my youngest was born, I was 43 older, and I was fortunate to be able to stay home, and that gave me the time to start trying to become published.
So let's hear it for supportive husbands.
I'm very fortunate that way.
I don't know whether my wife would list me, but so when your smallest was born, you said, okay, now I can do this full time.
That's what I said, and people thought I was nuts, but I did it anyway. In fact, where is it? I have a somewhere. I know I put it here somewhere. I have a card. Oh, here it is, that I keep here. This stays by my writing desk. And I have always had it since I started doing this. It says, today's mighty oak is just yesterday's nut that held its ground. And that's how I felt. It felt like a nut. And so when the rejection started coming in, I just looked at this card and I thought, I'm going to be that oak tree.
It's very good because writers are nuts.
They are. Yeah, you have to be.
Yeah. So you started writing, and then what happened?
So I won that contest, but I couldn't get that published. And then a whole other year went by, and I had, by that time, I had like 150 rejections. And then I spent quite a bit of money and joined Kidlit College, which I don't think is around anymore, but they connected you with editors. And so I was fortunate to be connected with Sarah Rocket. And of course, I sent her my first place story, which she turned down. And then it was like a Facebook or a Zoom. It was like a Zoom thing. And every time I talked to her, I talked to her and she turned me down. But every time I talked to her, I had to pay some big money. I thought, darn it, I'm going to do it again because I love Sleeping Bear books. So I gave her another manuscript, which I love. It's about a tree and it's my favorite, one of my favorite stories. But again, it was not my own voice. So she turned it down. And then I thought, okay, I felt like a nut, but I thought I'm going to spend more money and do it a third time. And so I gave her the dandelion story, and that had actually been rejected 12 times. But then I can read it to you. I have this, the email. She said, we had a meeting last week and decided to move forward with Little Dandelion. Everyone loved, and loved was in all capital letters, this story. It topped all of our lists at discussion. We're so thrilled to add it to our publishing program. So that was it.
How did you feel?
I leaped out of my chair and raced to my house, and my dog didn't know what was going on. She was running after me like, what are we doing? Yeah, screaming and so excited, just so excited. And it is a magical feeling to have books out and to go to bed and think, I wonder if any children sat next to their parents tonight or sat next to that special somebody and, you know, listened to my words, because that's the magic of picture books.
So, it is.
Yeah.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This is incredible. So Sleeping Bear is a wonderful press. They have rejected me too. But we keep trying because we're all little nuts.
Right.
I love that. That's a great metaphor. We're little nuts, and sometimes we turn into trees.
Right.
And your dandelion seeds also. You know, down goes the root, up goes the shoot. I love that. It's so perfect. I mean, I would buy your book just on that little doublet, you know. It's been out about a year. And is it selling on all 7 continents like dandelions?
Well, I don't know about that, but it did sell. A Book of the Month Club bought it. So before it was released, it was actually number one on Amazon. Incredible. I couldn't believe it.
No, so I can believe it. Julia, this is a people out there. This is a beautiful book. It's I think it's like a picture book for 3-year-olds too. It's it's so lyrical, and it's beautiful, and the message is lovely, and dandelions are downtrodden. Give it up for dandelions.
But kids love dandelions.
Yeah,
that's what we have to write about. So you were right on your search for the dandelion story, Mal, because we have to write about things that fascinate children. Like, you have to get in their mind and think about, okay, what do kids love?
Yeah. But
Andalon, train.
But Julia, here's the thing. We are not pitching our stories to kids. We're pitching our stories to adults at the, you know, agents and publishing houses and librarians and teachers who aren't kids. Right. So there's serious gates that we have to traverse here.
True.
That's why your story is so special, because your seed of the story sprouted and down went the root and up went the shoot. And my story about dandelions that has characters isn't going nowhere. But maybe later you can help me with my dandelion story. Then I can say, Julia Richardson made my dandelion dream come true. And how did the let's build a little train happen? Because, you know, you could say this was a fluke. I sold one book to Sleeping Bear Press, but you actually sold two, and maybe there's more on the way. Tell us about Let's Build a Little Train.
Well, the truth is, I was frustrated by rejections. So I thought, I'm going to write about something kids love, and kids love trains. There's a lot of train books out there. That was the hardest thing about writing that book, was coming up with a new spin on trains, something that hadn't been done before. And I remember staring at a picture I had of when I was a child, and my mom used to make these amazing pastel trains out of, she would cook the cake in like a coffee, the engine would be out of a coffee can, and then little squares like for the all the different cars, and they were all different colored frostings and filled with candies. And so I stared at that picture because I just, that was a magical time, those train cakes. Thought, what kind of story can I write about trains? And then it just, the thought popped into my mind, how did my mom make those cakes? And then, how are steam engines made? I had no idea. So there it was. That was the nugget. And then I decided, and I don't recommend it, to write it in rhyme. It's makes it impossible. You know, rhyme is great, but it's also very frustrating to write in rhyme. But it worked. And I think kids like rhyme. But it's hard to do it and do it so it works.
Okay, would you like to read a little bit?
Sure.
Our audience loves rhyme. We're all 5-year-olds at heart.
Yeah, I love rhyme. Right.
They're harder to sell.
They are harder to sell. And part of that is because they have that sing-songy feel to them. So what I did was I divided up the rhyme stanzas with the train sounds. And then as the train's getting built, the train sounds get longer to sort of reflect that the train is getting built. So let's build a little train to chug along the track that goes from here to there and circles round and back. Choo.
Great.
We'll need a giant warehouse with lots of helping hands. An engineer will manage and supervise commands. Choo, choo. A worker cuts the metal to make the bogey base and welds it all together with goggles on his face. Chug-a-choo-choo.
Okay, so, hold on. We're going to get into trouble with the publisher.
Oh, I don't want to do that.
No,
They're my only friends.
I certainly don't want to do that. No. So that's wonderful. And I'm going to say that the rhyming is important, but the meter is more important. Yeah. And you have the meter down pat. And this is what many authors don't understand, that in order to write in rhyme, the poem has to sing, the story has to sing. And for that reason, it has to be this doodle-deedle-deedle-da-doodle-da-da-dum. And if you can't sing it in that silly children's voice, it's not gonna chugga-chugga-choo.
Right.
And you have the onomatopoeia right.
I put my hand under my chin and I read it about 1,000 times, and your chin has to hit your hand in the same pattern. So yeah, it's nothing scientific. That's how I do it.
Did you invent that? Because I've never heard that.
I read that online somewhere. I can't remember who it was that does that. Yeah.
The walrus and the carpenter were walking hand in hand. They wept like anything to see such quantities of sand. Yes. Mm. What I tell my students is that you have to be able to sing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible. So you have that gift. And so now I want to come back. Almost half an hour has gone by and we're still having fun.
Oh, yes. Yes. Well, I have to mention, I'm not sure it's my gift. I have a wonderful critique group and we're a team. So that rhyme, one of my critique partners is amazing at rhyme. So she's very helpful. It's definitely a partnership. We have four in our group and I couldn't do it without them. So I need to mention them.
Yes, and we'll come to your secrets of success in a few minutes.
Oh, okay.
Actually, but I want to speak about the first one. You mentioned dyslexia.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite musicians is dyslexic, and he has a musical gift that I ascribe to the different manner in which he hears music in his brain. Mm-hmm. So do you think that dyslexia for you has turned somehow, I know you give talks in schools about the challenge of being dyslexic and then becoming a very successful author. But has this turned out to be a gift? And if so, in what ways?
I don't feel like it's a gift, more of a curse. I've read stories about people with dyslexia that feel like it's a gift. But for me, language is hard. Like I know I'm doing this interview, but a lot of times I think slowly, like I think about what I want to say. It comes to me maybe 5 minutes after I say it. I don't know. Or I'll say something I'll think later. Oh, that wasn't exactly how it happened. So I still feel like my dyslexia sometimes makes me feel cloudy. I don't know if you know what I mean, but as far as writing, the introverted creative part of me, like maybe that comes from dyslexia. I don't know, but I love to sit in front of my computer and write. It's like meditation. And if I don't get a little bit of it almost like every day for the last 10 years, I mean, I need it. Like I need my chocolate every day. So yeah.
And nursing is a thing of the past?
When I had my youngest son, I decided to stay home, and I was 43 and stayed home to take care. I was lucky. So yeah.
Wonderful. So now it's a good time to talk about advice that you give to other authors who are on their way to success. You are, I keep saying this to all my interviewees, only 1 in 1,000 authors gets published by traditional presses, and you have 2 books out with a wonderful publisher. And you have other stuff coming out that you might want to share or not. And beyond having a critique group, which people mention over and again on the show, what other secrets do you have about the writing process, creativity, and so on?
My biggest one is if you have a manuscript and gets rejected, don't give up on it. If you love it, somebody else will love it too. You just have to be stubborn and you have to keep trying, and you have to be willing to revise, cut out. You have to be willing to cut out you might have some words that you just love and they might need to be come out of there. So you have to be willing to let go and change. I know some friends of mine that have these fabulous manuscripts and they're not published, so they sort of give up on them, and I think, oh no, please, somebody will publish that, I just know it. You have to just keep fiddling with them and keep trying. That's my biggest advice. I don't really think getting published is, I know it's hard, but it has more to do with persistence and stubbornness. And I'm going to do this. I'm going to keep trying. And eventually somebody will, you know, notice you. You get better too every time. As years go by, you're improving. You might not realize it.
You get better if you listen.
Yeah.
My writing started to improve when I started to listen to people. Instead of saying, what do you know?
That's what's so great about a strong critique group. I trust my critique partners and I trust their advice because I know that they want me to be published as much as they want themselves to be published. So out of the four of us, three of us are now published.
Wonderful.
And that fourth one, I mean, she deserves to be published. So I know it's coming. So you just have to keep trying. And you do have to have that support group though, because you could get three rejections. I don't think people that don't write and submit realize how much rejections affect writers, because it can really be a downer, a bummer. You might be having a great day and then you open your email and there's two rejections sitting there. And this is what I do for my school visits. I put Eeyore because that's how I feel after I get rejections. I feel like Eeyore, like, why do I do this? This is nuts.
More ideas.
I think if you want to write for younger children, you have to think about what you want to read. If you had worked a full day and you were tired, you wouldn't want to sit down as a parent and read a long story. You want to read something that's fun for the child, but has just a few words and you're done and you can say goodnight. The books, these two books both have about 300 words. It can be hard to tell the story in that many words, but if you want picture books that parents are going to read, they have to be, and especially parents today, they're so busy, there's so much going on. They have to be short and they have to be about things, topics that kids care about.
That's good advice. Topics that the kids care about more than the parents.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
That's great. So do you want to divulge what you're working on these days?
Well, these days, I am working on taking my marionettes to a school visit. So I built a stage out of PVC pipes and it rolls. I'm really excited about that. I can roll it from classroom to classroom and it's super easy to take apart, two pieces, and it pops together. So yeah, that's what I've been working on. But as far as writing, I do have a middle grade story, but I've not gotten very far with that. But, you know, I'm a nut. I'm going to keep on trying and keep on revising and working on it. And hopefully someday. That can be frustrating, I've found, with the middle grade story, because you work even harder. You know, there's 50,000 words and your critique partners read it and rave about it. And you can't get anybody else to even, like, respond. So then I thought this will be easy because I've written a middle grade story and I'm published and I've gotten great feedback, but no, it's very hard to, it's not easy to get published. You have to just keep trying. So
keep at it.
Yeah. And I'm always working on picture books.
And also enter contests, because your first break came with a contest win.
Well, I won the contest, but that story wouldn't get, you know, I couldn't get that story published. So
it gave you, we're going to publish that story. But that gave you the impetus and the self-confidence and the wherewithal to continue. I want to say that we've talked for 37 minutes. It's been exciting and wonderful. And if I didn't say anything, people in the audience would say that you're a natural. And this is your very first interview. And I hope it will be the first of many. And maybe next year you can interview me and make me suffer for 38 minutes.
Yeah.
Anything you would like to say in the end? Oh, and I guess your best advice is to have five chickens, right? Every author should have five chickens.
I love my chickens. They're my best friends. No, I'm kidding. But they are my friends. I go out and talk to them, and they always have friendly words to say back. They're more about my pets than my, you know, I don't know. They're not, they don't give me too many eggs, but they're fun. I love birds, actually. So
birds is a good idea for books.
I've got a lot of birds.
So listen, everybody, Julia's books are wonderful. She's wonderful. Run out and buy them. And Julia, it's been wonderful to interview you. We're going to set up a separate tête-à-tête and talk about the voices and everything else and maybe help one another, which is, I'll just say, one of the remarkable things of this community is the willingness of people, critique partners, just wonderful people to help one another on this journey, because it is such an arduous one.
Yeah.
So congratulations to you, Julia, for these two lovely books. I can't wait to see what is coming next, but I do guarantee you that your nuts will become trees.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Your eggs will take flight. Your stories will soar.
Your seeds will sprout. How's that?
Your seeds will take root, and then they'll upshoot.
Yeah.
This has been wonderful. So I'm Mel Rosenberg. I'm the host of the Children's Literature. I should write this down somewhere. I'm the host of the Children's Literature channel for the New Books Network. And I've been speaking to the wonderful author of Little Dandelion Seeds, The World, and Let's Build a Little Train, Julia Richardson. So thanks so much, Julia, for being on the show. And you'll get an email from me. And I just say, it was a wonderful interview. So much fun. I can't wait.
You made it fun, Mel. Thank you.
No, you did. And I can't wait to meet you, but I'm not going to go to Southwest rural Michigan.
Oh, you should. Even though
I would love to meet you.
You go to New York.
Maybe on my way to Winnipeg someday.
Okay.
Take care. Thank you so much.
Bye.
I never know how to shut these things. Bye, dear. People are still watching. I'm going to write you.
Oh.